Omaha Steaks semi-annual sale is here. Save 50% site-wide on legendary steaks, gourmet burgers, chicken, pork, seafood, and more. Plus, get an extra $35 off with promo code AUDIO at omahasteaks.com. Shop now to save 50% site-wide on steaks and more during Omaha Steaks semi-annual sale. Plus, get an extra $35 off with promo code AUDIO at checkout. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code AUDIO. Minimum purchase may apply. See site for details.
We are recording. Yay. This is our first, I don't even know what these episodes are going to be called, but welcome to Undisclosed, whatever we're going to call these episodes. These are our to be addendums at some point. You guys might recall back in the day, Undisclosed during the seasons would have a second episode every week with John Cryer and others hosting. That was called the addendum. We are bringing back the addendum, but in between seasons, when we don't have a specific case to talk about, we're still going to be dropping these second episodes during the week because there's always stuff in the news that we want to talk about. We don't have a forum. So that's what these episodes are going to be about. I am Rabia. I'm here with Colin. Colin, hi, how are you?
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm good, but we are not alone. We have somebody else joining us for these episodes, and I'm actually really excited, despite the face she is making right now. I want to introduce all of our listeners to the incredible Meetal Thelhan. Now, that name might sound familiar if you actually listen to Undisclosed all the way to the end credits. Meetal has been our executive producer forever. But also, Meetal has been a friend of mine, I think, for like 30 years I've known you. I mean, it's been a long time, right, Meetal?
Forever in a day.
Forever in a day. So welcome to the front of the, front of the mic, Meetal, on Undisclosed.
Thank you. I'm scared, but Rabia dragged me out from the behind the scenes.
Meetal has produced multiple podcasts. She has sat in on 8 bajillion recordings in the last 10 years. And she can talk. She's a true crime aficionado like the rest of us. And there's, you know, like one of the few people in my life that I can talk about true crime with in the real world. And Meetal, you're going to do just fine. So thoughts, what are you about to say?
I don't know. I'm nervous. I guess our audience will let us know whether they want me to come back next week or not.
The audience is well, you're going to be back no matter what, because you produce our show.
That's true. That's fair.
Yes. We would be the Titanic without it, without you on. But anyhow, the way we're going to do this is this. Look, every week there's always news in true crime and in the law and all kinds of stuff. You know, I see this on our Facebook groups and on Instagram. We get messages saying, hey, could you guys talk about this? Or could you talk about that? And sometimes these are cases or stories that are not like anything that's investigative that we can do, but something we just kind of want to talk about. And that's what this forum's going to be. And I'm excited about this because there's always stuff that I'm like mostly horrified by in true crime news. And so the three of us are going to get each a shot at a story we want to talk about that week. And we're not going to be pre-planning this. Like Colin and Meetal don't know what I really I'm bringing to the table today. I don't know what they're going to be talking about today. And so we're going to be learning along with the rest of you and then like discussing a little bit, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Sounds good. So I'm going to open up. This very first episode of 2026, whatever these episodes are called. Maybe we should take a poll of listeners. That's what we want to call these episodes. Yeah. Like we're running out of adjectives to describe the episodes.
I thought of extra.
Extra. Well, that's the thing. It's not original. I thought unfiltered because we're kind of, none of this is going to be scripted, but I don't know. Let's let it marinate. We're actually recording this a couple of weeks before it drops. So we've got a little time to let it marinate. We'll figure it out by the time you guys actually hear this. All right. So the story that I want to bring to you guys, Colin and Meetal, today is, now this is something I have seen. If you're on social media and, you know, depending on your algorithm, but I'm a parent of a teenager and a younger one who uses electronic devices, has popped up a number of times. And I kind of have not paid close attention because I thought this is probably like conspiracy theory stuff that's not a real thing, except it is a real thing. And this is something that has been horrifying me now the more I learn about it. So this all kind of became very solid for me because a couple of weeks in early December, There was a hearing at the Senate Judiciary Committee in which a group of parents testified about their children being targeted and harassed by this nebulous group called 764. Have you guys heard of it?
Had not, yeah.
I think so.
Have you, Mithal?
We might have the same algorithm.
We might, right? I mean, Mithal, wait, how old are your kids, Mithal?
12 and 6.
12 and 6. So yeah, I mean, like, this is kind of like the age range we're all, like, you know, that's actually being targeted. So one of the parents who testified, her name was Tamia Woods, and it's such an awful story. She had a 17-year-old son named James, and in November of 2022, James, who had connected with somebody online, ended up, you know, he thought it was a girl or a woman, and he, you know, became kind of involved in this, you know, cyber relationship. And then he sent a video of himself to her that was kind of a compromising video. Well, obviously it wasn't a woman. He was being catfished by some man somewhere in the African continent. And then that man said to James that I'm going to distribute this video of you all over the internet to everybody you know, to people in your school, to your family, if you don't give me $300. Now, James is a kid, did not have $300, but also he starts getting harassed in 24 hours. He got 200 messages on his phone, harassing him, threatening him. And his mother, Tamia Woods, testified, read some of these messages out loud. They are heartbreaking. Anybody who had gotten 200 messages like that. I mean, and you know, when you're a kid, maybe you're not like, oh, I should just block this person or tell my parents or tell the authorities. You're just terrified. Well, he just couldn't take it anymore. And James took his own life, and the family found him in their home. He had taken his own life because he just succumbed to the pressure of this. And he's not the only one. This has happened to a number of young people. You know, sextortion is what it's called, but it can look like a lot of different things. And, a little bit about this group, 764. So I kept hearing 764, and I'm like, this is like this, it sounds made up. But apparently 764 was a group that was born in early 2021. And it came out of, like, it was a Discord group that was founded by a 15-year-old kid named Bradley Cadenhead. He lived in some Texas town, and 764 were the first three digits of his zip code. And that's why he called it 764. It's basically became this online child exploitation enterprise. And the FBI, in fact, consider this group to be one, and there's numerous, like, kind of iterations of it, to be online terrorism. They operate not just in America, all over the world. They use threats, blackmail, they groom children. They will, you know, they'll ask them to do, like, small things and then use it as blackmail to do more harmful things. Sometimes it's self-harm. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's something sexual to themselves or somebody else. But they have also been found to coerce or threaten the victims into hurting others and doing violent things to others. And the problem is that how do you arrest people around the world doing this? It's very hard to find them, first of all, because this is not it's not an organization, right? It's like they're just people who are loosely connected on the internet doing this thing. It's kind of like, I guess, like a child pornography network type of thing, right? Like, it's very nebulous. Last year, this one reporting agency was like trying to figure out how many cases. It's very hard also to get a good number because the victims don't want to report it. It's humiliating, right? So about a year ago, the FBI was conducting about 250 investigations. Now they're above 400. So that's just the investigations they're conducting, which means probably there's two or three amount of that, you know, those things happening. The National Center for Missing and Exploited Children says that it's gotten about 2,000 reports in the last couple of years per year of these kinds of incidences. And, you know, there have been charges brought against some people. There was a 21-year-old out of Arizona. His name was Baron Martin. He was charged with, I mean, this is interesting because they are expanding the definition to fit within terrorism laws. So he was actually charged with conspiring to provide material support to terrorists and 28 other offenses. He abused at least 9 victims, 8 of whom were minors, one as young as 13. And he, I mean, I don't even want to talk about some of the stuff he coerced them into doing, but, you know, and then at the end, he would just basically threaten to dox them. So these folks, this group that was testifying at the Senate was testifying in support for 3 bills that they are hoping to get passed. And along with Tamia Woods, others who testified were former Assistant U.S. Attorney Jessica Leiber-Smoller and Lauren Coffrin from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. And the bills that they're trying to pass, there's 3 bills. The first one is called the Sentencing Accountability for Exploitation Act, or the SAFE Act. The second one is Ending Coercion of Children and Harm Online Act. I mean, the ECCHO is the abbreviation, not that that makes it easier, and the Stop Sextortion Act. And cumulatively, what these bills would do is, first of all, make it like a federal offense to threaten to coerce anybody with sexual material, which I'm surprised isn't actually already a crime. Colin, I'm going to look at you because you're like the...
Not me.
I mean, not... Well, maybe you know, Mito. But I'm surprised that that's not already a crime, like federally.
Seeing here, like, we're recording December 22nd. On December 19th, Alexis Chavez, a member of 764, was convicted on RICO, it's like racketeering.
Oh, okay.
As well as child exploitation charges. So, now I think a lot of this might be covered by RICO, the racketeering statute, which sort of covers mafia and gang related.
Extortion.
So this what you're talking about is probably a little bit more directed towards this, but I think RICO at least
cover it.
Obviously could cover, yeah.
And I think what law enforcement's been doing is trying to apply the existing laws they have, but clearly they do need more tools to deal with this. And other tools included in this would be like extradition, allowing for extraditions from certain countries. Because in this, in James's case, like the culprit was, I don't know where, but he was somewhere in the African continent. I don't know which country he was in, but they couldn't extradite him. But, you know, just expanding all kinds of tools for law enforcement and also holding platforms accountable. Mm-hmm. And which obviously the platforms then fight back on. And, you know, when President Obama came, when his administration began, he took the whole model of domestic counterterrorism and turned it into something called CVE, which is countering violent extremism, as a kind of a policy framework. And I actually worked in that field for 6-7 years. And that's what I was doing when Serial dropped. Well, for this, the FBI has kind of created this new framework called NVE. And let's see, I can't remember what it's called. It's nihilistic violent extremists, which is like scary. I mean, but this is now a thing. So nihilistic violent extremism is now a category of criminal behavior. So anyway, look, as a parent, this is hard. I keep saying over and over, don't let your kids play Roblox. I think my 8-year-old would run away from home or kill me in my sleep if I took away Roblox from him. So, Mita, let me ask you, like, what do you do? How do you, like, manage with your son, who's 12, on these issues?
I keep the reins tight. He's not on Roblox, but he's not that interested. We do. Like, he does play Fortnite. And because I've read and heard so much about, you know, the scary parts of that and, you know, how they're similar to Roblox, you know, you can chat with other people and all that kind of stuff. We've turned those types of things off, those capabilities. So you're just playing. You could still be playing with a friend, but it's not, you know, he's not wearing headsets. He's not connected to the chat feature and things like that so that they can still play, but it's limited to that.
It is through gaming. A lot of the gaming platforms is where these people find and then groom these kids.
I remember maybe a year and a half ago, he was playing, I want to say like football or something, but it was a video game and he had just installed it. And, you know, we could hear it through the speakers and out of nowhere, we hear like a man's voice just cussing. And we're like, what the hell?
Oh my God, really?
Yeah. And so we're like, what the hell? And like, I came downstairs because, again, like we were around. And I was like, what was that? And he's like, oh, I don't know. I just, some guy just threw the speakers. And I was like, what guy, where, you know, yeah. And looking, I guess it's automatically enabled. Right. And so we turn all kind of stuff off and have made sure that it stays off. That's
wait, how does somebody like, was he talking through the chat feature? Like how, that's a whole nother level.
There's of crazy people that are chatting, right? So if you have the chat feature on, and again, I don't know about video games. I can't play even for a minute without feeling.
Yeah.
There are people that are chatting, the kids that have like the mic on their headsets and things like that. He doesn't have any of that kind of stuff. Intentionally, yeah. But yeah, you can just kind of, for some of these games, you can just see them chatting. You can read what they're writing. And then for other ones, it's in our case, it's connected through the speaker, but in their headsets, you can also talk and communicate that way. And that's how we happen to be through our speakers.
I didn't know this actually. Yeah. So my son always has his headphones on and I'm like, good. I don't want to hear all the stuff. Like he plays in front of us, like, you know, on the sofa or in the kitchen, but I'm like, okay with him plugging it in. So we don't have the noise pollution. And I, every so often will walk by and he's always either doing some kind of zombie game, which seems pretty, I mean, like, I'm like, I don't want guns. I don't want like combat type games. I think he's way too young for that. Or he's doing this game where he's building stuff, mm-hmm. which also seems okay to me. But I did not know about the headset thing, so I'm definitely going to take away his headphones now.
I mean,
call it. Yeah,
I don't think you need to take it away necessarily because I would just check to see if there are chat features that you could turn on or off.
Okay,
you know what I mean? Okay. Because if he's playing with a friend and they're talking, that's okay. Because even that, you can. And again, this could vary game by game, but if you add your friend, then it's just the two of you that are communicating. Versus yeah. you just being kind of in a chat room or a group yeah. that's got all kinds of random people in it.
I mean, I worry mostly, look, like I said, he's 8. Things change so quickly. Who knows what's on the horizon every couple, you know, and then I worry mostly about like the things we don't know our kids are doing. Right. Yeah. Thankfully, look, my eldest is in cybersecurity. My second is going off to college and I think she kind of knows, but like with the 8-year-old now, I think I have to be a little more careful. Colin, what do you think about the idea of holding these platforms responsible, like holding Roblox responsible? Because that is apparently not just in terms of 764, but generally there are so many predators on Roblox, apparently.
Yeah. And this, you know, is kind of similar to the whole debate about holding platforms liable for defamation and for, you know, all other sorts of harms that befall people online. But I mean, look, especially when it's the children who are being preyed upon here, I think it is something where it makes sense legislatively, to the extent we're allowed to constitutionally, to hold the platforms liable so that they can put these protections in. Because I mean, from what I was reading here, this is my first knowledge of it, but this case out of San Antonio, I mean, this is pretty pernicious. This is horrible.
Yeah. It's rough. So look, what can we do about this, right? First of all, they're looking for bipartisan support for these bills. So you can certainly contact your legislator's office and say, I want these bills passed. I want the support for it. And I'd be interested in, like, you know, you guys taking a look at these bills and telling me what you think. You know, I mean, the other thing is, like, you know, when it comes to online behavior, like, you know, the idea that, well, is this an infringement on, like, constitutional rights, right? Like, First Amendment. Do you think, Colin, there's an argument to be made there? Because I feel like that's what always, like, the platforms come back with.
I mean, I think it's going, I mean, in terms of the platform, that's a little bit of a separate issue because there's a whole statutory framework in place and constitutional protections. But in terms of the people actually encouraging or telling the kids into these behavior, yeah, there's certainly not going to be. I mean, there could, and that's the tough cases, right? It's like when you have the sex offender registry and we're having like a teenager who sends a candid photo to their girlfriend or boyfriend,
right?
And you don't want to get them caught up in it, but you know, for this core behavior where they're telling them to kill themselves or harm themselves, etc., yeah, I mean, that's certainly something you'd want to see prosecuted.
Yeah, well, one thing you can do, like I said, is to contact your legislator's office and show support for these bills so they can get the bipartisan support they need to get them passed. And the second thing is, if there is anything to report, you can report incidents to the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children cyber tip line. It's report.cybertip.org and contact the FBI because this is their jurisdiction. All right, so that's the happy story I wanted to start off with.
I could actually go next because my story kind of piggybacks off of yours.
Oh God. Okay, let's do that.
Not exactly, but somewhat. So basically, mid-November, there was a 22-year-old special needs girl who was kidnapped by two men, zip-tied to a tree. She managed to get herself free.
Where was this?
In Arkansas.
Okay.
She manages to get herself free, goes to like a nearby home and calls the cops. Police officer, you know, responds. And by that time, lo and behold, her mom shows up at that house. How did her mom show up? She's the one who planned the kidnapping.
What?
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's a plot twist. I didn't.
Exactly. Why did she do that? Because her daughter, who special needs, so she's, even though she's 22 years old, she's kind of has the mental capacity of an 11-year-old. She was chatting to strangers online. And that was her mom's way of teaching her a lesson, quote unquote.
Crazy. Okay.
Yeah.
There's a lot to unpack there.
Exactly. And she managed to approach one of the nurse's aides that helps her take care of her daughter. And then they recruited two guys, you know, I'm assuming random guys to do the kidnapping and, you know, do all that.
Holy moly. Oh my God. And how did the mother think this was going to end? I mean, she didn't think the police would get involved. What did she think was going to?
She thought, you know, I know what they're doing because this is my master plan. I'm going to go to that tree and I'm going to tell her, like,
rescue her.
Are you okay? Yeah, yeah. See, this is why we don't talk to strangers online, honey.
Wow.
And that's it.
Okay.
So you're running out of closet space. The good news? You don't need to stop shopping. You just need to start selling with The RealReal. The RealReal is the world's largest and most trusted resource for authenticated luxury resale. Whether it's that mini bag that can't even fit your phone or those boots you never fully broke in, The RealReal handles everything from photography and copywriting to shipping and pricing. So you can just sit back, get paid, and make room for things that actually feel like you. And with 10,000 plus new arrivals every single day from top designers like Prada, Celine, Louis Vuitton, and Loewe, all for up to 90% off retail, you're bound to find something perfectly on brand to fill that extra closet space with. Plus, right now, you can get an extra $100 to shop when you sell for the first time. Make room for what feels like you. Go to TheRealReal.com to start selling and get your extra $100 to keep shopping at TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com. Terms apply.
It honestly sounds like the plot to a Coen Brothers movie, like, you know, Fargo, where William H. Macy arranges to have his wife abducted so her dad will pay the ransom money to him because they're in financial trouble. And a lot of Coen Brothers movies have like a kidnapping stave. I like to hear this in real life and the mom doing it with a special needs kid. No, that this is just nuts.
Right? It's crazy.
Horrible. Yeah.
So just a couple of weeks ago, you know, she had to go to court. She, along with her three accomplices, are charged with kidnapping, first degree false imprisonment, abuse of an adult, endangered or impaired person, third degree battery, and second degree terrorist threatening.
Holy crap.
Yeah.
They're throwing the book at her.
100%. They all pleaded not guilty. They're all out on bond. The mom's bond was $100,000. The other three, $25,000. But everyone's out right now. And there's a status hearing on June 24th of this year.
Yeah.
And the jury trial begins in August. Now, I'll ask you guys the question about that. But while that's happening, the daughter, obviously traumatized, the police officer said that, you know, the one who responded when she called 911 said while I was interviewing her, she was in fear for her life. And she was like clung to a teddy bear while we were interviewing her to try to understand what happened. So she's obviously, I mean, she's bruised up, like traumatized.
Oh my God. So she actually got hurt physically.
She got hurt
as well.
Zip ties. Cause she was trying to, managed to get out of the zip ties herself, but she's bruised up and, you know, obviously like just traumatized, 100%. The mother is not allowed to talk to her. She has zero contact with her. And now, you know, there's a court case regarding the guardianship. So she's mm-hmm. with Adult Protective Services.
Okay. Goodness, this is...
What, crazy?
It is crazy. What do you think about... I mean, like, they are throwing the book at this mother.
Mm-hmm. I mean, part of it is because this is a special needs person. Like, you can't... Mm-hmm. Sure, even if she was 11, you wouldn't have done that to them. I'm not going to do that to my 12-year-old son. You know what I mean? Just to teach him a lesson.
Yeah. Although you are a tough love mother. I know that.
Maybe. You're right. Maybe I would. No, I wouldn't.
No, you wouldn't do that. Look, the tough love for me is kind of like, if you tell a kid, don't do this, you'll get hurt. Don't do. Then maybe you're like, fine, just go ahead and jump off the sofa and then you'll learn your lesson versus pushing him off the sofa, which is what happened here. I guess that's the best analogy. But I mean, Colin, for like the kidnapping charge, I guess it depends on the state, but isn't intent like important here? I mean, the whole thing, none of this was a real kidnapping. Wouldn't that matter?
Well, so, I mean, if we look at the definition of kidnapping, I'll just take the South Carolina definition. It is the knowing aspiration.
Wait, are you pulling this right out of your head?
I'm not teaching.
Literally?
So
this right out of his head.
Aspiration is Latin for the taking and carrying away. And it's a knowing mens rea versus an intentional. There's a case in South Carolina where this guy is stealing a car. And as he's driving away, he realizes there's a kid in the back seat.
Oh.
And he's guilty of kidnapping, even though his goal wasn't to kidnap because he knew he was kidnapping. And so here, the mom knows these guys are taking and carrying away her daughter. And so, yeah, I mean, that would meet the legal definition of kidnapping.
And what's crazy is, so when they had come up with their plan, She told them, like, okay, when you get her, like, go to the park on the left. They ended up going to the park on the right, which is why she was delayed in getting to her.
It sounds like a movie script. Yeah, I mean, it's
it was the master plan. I mean, it's crazy. The question that I did actually have for you guys is, what's, like, why is there a status hearing and already a trial date? Like, what's the difference between the two?
So the status here... The status hearing is just, you know, assessing. So, like, for instance, you mentioned she's to have no contact with her daughter. And so, like, that's a bail condition of her being released, is no contact, order to have no contact. And so the status hearing is just sort of checking in and seeing, like, is she complying with the conditions of release? What's the status on discovery? And just making sure all the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed as the case is propelling towards trial.
Got it. Yeah. Because there's no way for us to find out about what's happening with the daughter, because it's under adult services, right? So there's view into that.
There's no way to know.
And so she's not with her family, I'm assuming, right? Because I think her father is her stepfather.
Mm-hmm. I'll tell you, I mean, look, the reason I feel a little bit conflicted about this is only because, I mean, the mother did something really stupid, but it came from a place of wanting to protect her daughter. In the dumbest way possible. You know, it's not like this woman, I don't think this mother, unless there's evidence to the contrary, is like a threat to her daughter's life or to other children, or is generally a criminal, right? And we don't even know if that's true for the other people who were involved, who were like, maybe they thought it was a prank. Who knows, right? Like maybe it's some teenage guys who got like $200 each and like, yeah, we'll do this. And the mom's involved. And it's like, so I'm like, I feel like there's trying to set a really harsh example, maybe for others, but if it just feels a little, I don't know, it feels a little much to me.
I mean, I was surprised when I saw that whole list of all the charges against her and the fact that all four of them are charged that way. But I don't know. I mean, I do think, that's the dumbest way of preventing your child from going to that stranger.
Right, right.
But still, I mean, she's going to be traumatized. Like, the trauma is so much more intense for her because of her mental capacity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, like, the mom's got to do at least some kind of time for the dumbness.
You think so?
Yeah. That's just...
Colin, do you think so? Do you think this is...
At least a kidnapping.
Incarceration? I don't think it deserves incarceration.
Yeah. I mean, I do. The way it was done, when Nethal's talking about the zip ties and she's getting injured and she's vulnerable because of having special needs, like, you combine all of that together, if this were someone who didn't have special needs and they didn't zip tie it, they, you know, maybe you get some suspended sentence, some community service. But like with everything that happened here that I'm hearing about, like, I think some prison time is warranted.
I think because of the special needs, you know what I mean? That changes the game. Like, yeah. It's not okay, I mean, in general.
First of all,
it's definitely not okay.
You're right. It's not okay in general. Here's the thing. I feel like if somebody zip tied me, I doubt if I could get out of zip ties. I would just die there. I mean, like, I'm not going to make it out. I'm guessing that mother was like, she'll never get out. She's just going to sit there till I get there, and I'll get there like 5 minutes later type of thing. I don't know, but I'm interested in seeing how this trial goes down. They did all plead not guilty, so they're going to fight the charges. So I guess we'll see how this goes. That's a interesting case. Parents out there, temper yourselves. Temper yourselves and maybe just put in parental controls instead of organizing fake kidnappings for your kids. All right, Colin, we're handing the baton to you.
Yeah, so my story is, you know, you have a trial here in the U.S. and the jurors are deliberating. They have two possible verdicts. They can vote not guilty. They can vote guilty if it's unanimous, defendant's convicted. If it's not, it's a hung jury. If it's unanimous, they're not guilty. Okay, we have an acquittal. Double jeopardy says they can't be re-prosecuted. Go across the pond to Scotland. For centuries, up until this year, Scotland had three possible verdicts the jurors could render. They could have guilty, they could have not guilty, and they could have not proven. And so in essence, not guilty, we think this defendant didn't commit this crime.
Yeah.
Guilty, they committed the crime beyond reasonable doubt. Not proven, we think this defendant probably committed the crime. We think that the prosecution didn't present enough evidence to prove guilt beyond a reasonable doubt. And in fact, in Scotland, this not proven verdict predates not guilty. They added not guilty later. And so finally, Scotland in 2025 says we're getting rid of the not proven verdict. And so we kind of have these competing considerations. The big competing consideration for keeping it is there was a study in 2019 that found with hypothetical jurors, if it's a close call about guilt beyond a reasonable doubt, if we get rid of the not proven verdict, it's going to lead more jurors to finding the defendant guilty so we can have more wrongful convictions.
Yeah.
The other side, it's found is the not proven verdict was confusing and jurors in Scotland didn't really know what it meant. They found there was some stigma for people found not proven. Oh, even though they're not convicted, everyone kind of thinks they're guilty. Mm. And then three, and this is, you know, maybe the most important one from my perspective, it was found, what can you get? You can probably guess. What type of case do you think had the most not proven and really low conviction rate?
Sexual assault?
Yeah, rape and sexual assault. Around a 43-44% conviction rate. And that's because a lot of not proven verdicts in rape and sexual assault cases. And so, you know, as of 2025, Scotland says we are getting rid of the not proven. It is like the rest of the world, including the U.S., either guilty or not guilty. So I'm curious, you know, for both your takes, I went in before knowing the sexual assault and rape data thinking, I like this not proven. I like the U.S. to adopt it. When I heard that, I started thinking maybe this change makes sense. So what do you two think? Do you think that the U.S. might consider this at some point or non-starter?
Was Scotland the only country in the world that did this?
Yeah, as far as I can tell, it's the only country that had it. Yeah,
that's interesting. It basically started off exactly like you said, where I'm like, oh, I like that idea. Mm. Because we hear this, I mean, like even with the nuns, we hear this from people all the time. Look, I don't think the state proved, you know, that he did it, but he probably did it just because my gut says he did, whatever type of thing. And that, for some reason, does not translate for people into not guilty. Because they feel like even if the state failed, the right thing to do is to find this person accountable for their crime. And so I don't know if there's statistics to show like how often that might be the result if they get rid of that. I mean, they're going to test it now, I guess. But I can completely see on the sexual assault stuff. But here's the thing. The flip side of that is if you have a sexual assault case and the jury and the prosecution really is not able to prove guilt beyond a reasonable, I mean, I don't know what the standard is, I guess beyond a reasonable doubt in that case, then that person should be found not guilty. I don't know. I kind of still like it. But what bothers me actually maybe a little bit more is the stigma part of it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, technically, they're acquitted. Technically, it's not like there's an in-between sentence that they get, right?
Yeah. They're still found not guilty, but they walk around and people who know about their case, you were not proven. You're probably guilty, even though you
got away with it.
Yeah, you got away with it.
I don't think it would work here. I don't think the U.S. would adopt that, because even when people are exonerated, there's still, you know, there's still the stigma and people are still like just don't believe it. You know, depending on their take of the case when they read about it or if they followed it or not, people are just quick to judge anyways. Yeah. I don't see it happening here. Yeah. There's a lot more that we need.
I mean, I think if the jury instructions are properly done and the juries understand that if you have not been convinced, then you have to find not guilty. Like, as long as that's impressed upon them, I know it doesn't always work to impress upon them. I mean, that should be the fix. But if they need it, like, kind of written out, like, even if you think that this person might, and I don't know, are jury instructions ever given like that, Colin? Because that feels like it would be really weird and awkward for the defendant, for the judge to be like, even if you think he's guilty, but the state doesn't prove it, you got to find him not guilty.
The typical instruction that I see most often is guilt beyond a reasonable doubt, is that reasonable doubt. Would you make an important life decision like buying a home, moving to a new city? If you'd be okay moving forward, you don't have reasonable doubt. If you wouldn't, you have reasonable doubt. It's kind of the way it's put in most jurisdictions. And, you know, it's, I don't know about that.
I have moved plenty of times when I didn't know if I should be moving.
That goes to the risk tolerance of people, right? You know, some people take that leap of faith and others are more conservative in their decisions. So, yeah, I don't know about that.
Well, what are social justice advocates saying about this? I'm confused. Is this a conservative move or a progressive move, to be honest?
I mean, I think it's kind of both, to certain, you know, because, yeah, the innocence movement is concerned this is going to lead to more wrongful convictions. Mm. You know, to your point that you made in terms of the state not proving guilt beyond a reasonable doubt in rape and sexual assault case. I mean, that's a big issue here in the States as well. And it's, you know, we've made efforts like the rape shield law. You can't bring in evidence of the prior sexual partners, the victim, et cetera. But it's just, the problem is that jurors just have difficulty believing rape and sexual assault victims. And the question is, what do you do? And Scotland at least says this not proven verdict is part of the issue. And so we need to get rid of it and maybe see what happens with the conviction rate.
Is that issue the biggest driving factor behind this? This is a major move for them after hundreds of years, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I read a few pieces and it mentioned all those concerns I referenced, including the sexual assault ones. I'm not sure if there's one primary driving force, but that certainly was one of them.
Okay. So this goes into effect like in the new year, 2026?
Yeah, I'm not sure whether it took effect now or whether it's 2026. But yeah, Scotland says it's gone. We can see what happens, right?
Join the rest of the world, Scotland, I guess. I mean, like, I guess they're figuring out, well, we may as well give it a shot. I'm trying to think of, if I'm a defendant, I would want that third option on the table. Mm-hmm. Don't you think so? I would feel like I have a better chance of not serving prison time, guilty or not guilty.
To your instruction, right? If that were the instruction given, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, if you find guilt beyond a reasonable doubt, that's guilty. If you find you believe the defendant is innocent, not guilty. If you find you think that it's more likely than not this defendant committed this crime, but you think the state's evidence has not proven that beyond a reasonable doubt, like, I would take it as the defendant all day,
yeah,
every day of the week if I were on trial for a crime.
Yeah, yeah. I wonder where other criminal defense attorneys stand on this. I feel like it's just, yeah. I feel like it's a little bit of a blow for defendants in that regard.
Yeah, we'll see what the conviction rates do, right? Are the conviction rates going to be stable? Are they going to go up? It'll be interesting to see.
I feel like,
let's make our predictions right now. I'm going to say it is about a 5-7% increase in the conviction rate in Scotland. Just my guess.
I feel like it's going to stay, but
it would increase.
You think so? I feel like it's going to stay the same. I feel like it's going to stay the same because I feel like you said, in the U.S., it's also very hard to get convictions on these kinds of charges. Juries don't want to believe victims. And if they're only like, if they're like, it's one or the other, then I'm just going to like go ahead and go with not guilty versus, you know, if I don't really believe. Yeah. But It'll be interesting. Let's see how this plays out. It's an experiment. We will learn along with Scotland what it looks like. All right. Well, those were three interesting stories, and we'll be back every week with three interesting stories. And if you guys have suggestions for us, like, you can, you know, DM us on our Instagram, or you can contact us on, actually, you can even go through our website. You can contact us on, Mita, what's our website again?
Undisclosedpod.com.
Thank you. And we have Facebook groups and a Facebook page, and you certainly can post there too if there's anything you want us to cover. And we're going to try to stay as kind of contemporary as we can, and kind of, you know, do little nuggets of news on this. Maybe that's what we should call this, nuggets and news. I don't know. Anyway. So see, Mital, that wasn't so bad, right? You did okay.
You don't understand. I'm an introvert. You're an extrovert. This is extremely difficult for me.
Evidence Professor Colin Miller. There was only
extreme introvert.
I know. There's only one extrovert.
Yes, but he's also like an encyclopedia, so he's got that going for him.
Listen, this is all about just having a conversation with three people who want to talk about crime and the law, and that's what we did. And I think we did it well. And I think Mital is going to love you. And I'm glad that the world finally and our listeners finally get to meet you. All right, guys. Well, we'll see you next week then, right? Thanks so much. Yep. Have a good week.
See ya.